Good morning. Welcome to Secret to My Success. My name is Alan Bornstein, and I'm here with...
Luis Alicea. Good morning, everyone. Happy to be here once again in this beautiful, beautiful morning.
So we are here to talk to business owners about their journey, their venture, how they went from being employed by somebody to being self-employed. Luis brought some amazing guests in here that have played professional sports, football, baseball, basketball, and golf. We've had some wonderful people, and this is about learning their secret to their success to help you grow your business. Thanks for being here with us this morning. We're so glad you could be here. If you have an interesting story, if you know somebody that you think we should be talking to, we'd like to hear from you. You can reach me, Alan, 561-953-2007 at extension 101. Once again, my name is Alan. Secret to my success, 561-953-2007, extension 101.
Please call us. We'd love to hear from you.
Thank you. Good day. This is Alan, Secret to My Success, here with Mr. Luis Alicea. Yay!
Hello, hello, hello. What's up?
How you doing, sir?
Good.
Let's go to Dawn first, and we're coming back to you. We have Dawn with us. Dawn. Yay. Hello, Dawn.
Hello, Alan. Hello, Louie.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello.
So, Dawn, you don't know this, but last week, Louie and I had the opportunity to drive up to Tampa and come back.
Oh, I bet that was fun. I did see some of the pictures. How did that go?
It went really well, and it's funny. So, this was the Florida Hall of Fame.
Okay.
And Louie figures he's a guest, and he taps me on the shoulder afterwards, and he says, "Did you know I was being inducted?" I'm like, no.
Oh, that's so cool.
I had no idea. I was like, oh, my God.
Congratulations.
It was fun, but it was fun. It was fun. I guess you pays to know people, eh?
Right.
Yeah.
So Louie was inducted into the Florida Sports. It's Florida Sports Hall of Fame?
Yep, Florida Sports Hall of Fame.
Super exciting. That's awesome.
I'll be famous now.
You're already famous.
You're infamous.
Yeah.
But it was really nice. They did a whole great session. They had some food, a bunch of people there. We met a lot of great people and actually won a whole wheelbarrow full of alcohol.
A wheelbarrow? Nice.
Yes.
Where is that? Did you bring me anything?
Did
you save me a bottle? You drank it already.
So what's crazy was we didn't realize that when we won this, we actually won the wheelbarrow.
An empty wheelbarrow?
No, it's filled.
Oh, it's included. Of course it is. Yeah.
And I'm like, Louie, if we take the wheelbarrow, you have nowhere to sit in my car.
So did you give it away?
No, Louie had to find a ride home.
So. He gave it away to a friend.
Funny. So did you know you were going to get inducted, Louie?
I had no clue. I had no idea.
What a great surprise. That's awesome.
Yep. It was a lot of fun. And while we were there, we got to meet this really cool guy, a gentleman by the name of Robin Fusen.
Oh.
I'm butchering his last name. Robin, thanks for being with us.
Yep. Hi, Robin.
Hey, thanks for having me on, folks. Appreciate it.
So as we're talking to him, here's a guy that played some baseball. We're having some really cool baseball stories, and we're going to continue with that. But here's a guy that went from being a baseball player to a judge on the 13th
from
Judicial jock, Circuit.
From a jock to a judge.
Jock to a judge. So, Robin, let's talk. Where are you from?
I am from Florida originally. I grew up in Tampa. Other than traveling for baseball, I've been here my whole life.
So did you go to college, or did you play baseball right out of high school?
Well, you know, I was hoping, like every kid that wanted to play, to get drafted out of high school, but it didn't go the way I wanted. And Louis will appreciate this. I had a scholarship to FSU. I'm a big Noel fan. Mm. And at the last minute, Cleveland and Cincinnati reaches out and says, "Hey, don't go to a four-year school. Then you're locked in for three. We want you to go to a junior college, and if you do what we think you can do, then we'll draft you." So they sent me over to Valencia Community College in Orlando with about 200 other people. It was like a massive program. I make the team. I get a scholarship to play there. We win the state championship. I make the all-state team. And true to their word, Cleveland drafts me in the fourth round of the January draft.
I hate to ask you, what year was this?
78.
78, okay.
1978, yep, 100 years ago.
Wow.
I was 8 years old.
Sure you were, Dawn. Well. That's what you're telling everybody, right?
Yeah, I said it quietly.
That's how it all started.
Okay, so what position did you play?
I was a right-handed pitcher, and I played 10 years in the minor leagues, went to a couple of big league spring trainings, and I started every fifth day for 10 years. It wasn't like I was just, you know, at the end of my career, I wasn't buried in the bullpen somewhere. I actually, you know, I never missed a start. I just walked out there and did what I had to do. And after 10 years of that, they finally told me, hey, you can't play anymore. You're too old. So I became a coach with Oakland. I did that for 3 more years. I didn't like coaching. So I started finishing up my undergraduate degree in the off season, which led me to where I am today.
I could ask, does the movie Bull Durham bring back bad memories for you?
Yes, it does. And good memories, too. We had a lot of fun. There are definitely a lot of things that happened in that movie that happened in real life, and some of the things that you probably couldn't put in the movie. So,
okay.
It was a fun time.
We could put those on the radio. Let's hear. What do you got?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know how long the statute of limitation is on some of this stuff. I will say this.
You're a judge. You know better than all of us. What do you got?
At some point during the filming of The Natural, which was in Buffalo in 83, a sign was defaced in which a young pitcher on the team, whose name was Wally, and people kind of picked on him a little bit, so he was kind of a whiner. So some undisclosed players entered the ballpark late at night and painted on the outfield sign in right center field where there was a baby's face screaming and 4 diapers flapping on a line that the movie company had painted. I guess it was for an ad to make the park look historically accurate for the time. And they just painted Walley, one letter on each of those diapers. And when the movie company came in the next day to begin filming again, they couldn't because their sign had been messed up. No one was ever discovered. I'm not saying anything. I'll take it to my grave. And what they did was we went on the road and they doubled up their filming schedule and filmed it while we were out of town.
Oh, that's all right.
We did get to watch a lot of it. So, yeah, Joe Charbonneau was in that movie. He had just been released from our club and they put him in the movie. Duke McGuire, who's one of the voices of the Buffalo Bisons, he was in that movie. The kid that was the relief pitcher at the end of the game, Chris Raybaum, he was a local kid from Buffalo. Cleveland had just released and he was in that movie. So it was kind of fun to see all that happen.
Wow.
I got a chance to play at the stadium. When I first went to AAA, that was one of the first stadiums that I actually went and played. And it's pretty cool. It was really shallow in right field, and the stands looked like just like in a movie. Like the fans were like right on top. Pretty cool.
It was like 200 and something feet down the right field line, and they put up a giant screen.
I hit a home run my second at bat there.
That's a good place to go if you can get the ball down the right field line.
Down the right field line, baby.
Lou, it's funny. Lou, you don't remember what you had for breakfast yesterday, but in what year do you remember having a home run in your second at bat?
Oh, I remember at bats. I remember pitches. I remember counts. Every once in a while, some of them come back to be like, man, I wish I would have swung at that pitch. I saw it so well, but I froze and I didn't swing at it. Trust me, it comes back.
So, Robin, how did you get in the head of a guy like Louie if you were pitching against him? What would you do? Would you go out of your way to mess with some of these guys?
Well, I was back in the day. I don't know if anybody threw 100 except maybe Nolan Ryan. So I think the highest I ever lit up a gun would might have been 91. But I was more effective at around 87, 88 because my slider was about that same speed. And I could throw an off-speed pitch, and it's alleged that I might have put something on the ball from time to time. But, you get a hitter who's a contact hitter who just plays a lot and knows how to play. You got to let them get themselves out most of the time. Just try to keep them off balance, move the ball in and out, up and down, change speeds, and hopefully they'll hit it at somebody. And that's
the
best way to deal with a contact here.
Pitch to contact.
Yeah, because a lot of the Latin players, I play 6 years of winter ball, and they swing a lot. Their saying was, you don't walk off the island. You got to hit.
You got to swing your
butt
out of
the island. They swing at a lot of pitchers.
Exactly right.
Hmm.
Yeah, a lot of the Latin players, they have, they don't hit soft pitching well either. They're more fastball hunters, and, you have to really learn. You have to really learn after a few years. And even when I played, those guys, I don't remember getting a hit of Kevin Burkett because I think his top speed was 88, but he moved the ball. I mean, I had nightmares thinking, I got to face this guy today. But guys are too hard, I know, no problems with it.
Okay.
Yeah, I think I might have to redo the metrics. I think if you get a guy out there that can throw in the 80s, and have command of the plate like a Mike Maddux or Greg Maddux, and watch
Greg
that guy
Maddux.
Today, Greg Maddux would eat these guys up. They'd be sitting dead red looking for a 99-mile-an-hour fastball, and they would never see anything close to that.
They don't locate.
I think they got to start looking at guys that can pitch rather than just throw.
Yeah. Today's pitching is not very good. A lot of young guys are all just trying to, you know, lit up the radar guns, but they can't locate. If you pay attention to a lot of the home runs hit today in today's game, more 90% of them are mistakes. Balls should have been thrown low and away. They get, you know, middle, up and in, and things like that, where the guys have the sweet spot. All the hitters, all they're trying to do is pull for the fences. So it's easier to pitch if you can command today.
Robin, a guy hit you a couple times, and you're not feeling the love. You ever throw a little chin music just to kind of back him off the plate or take some revenge on somebody who did something, one of your teammates?
Well, you know, it was a different world back then. There wasn't a lot of bat flipping or making, you know, staring at your home run. There was an incident. In fact, we were talking about it tonight. The fact the president of the Florida Sports Hall of Fame, his first game at Savannah with the Braves, they roll into Chattanooga, and I'm pitching. And the first guy up against me hits a home run. Not a good start. Next guy hits a single. The third guy up hits a three-run home run. So up steps Brooke Jacoby. Brooke, I don't know. I think it got away from me. I never threw it in anybody's head. But I will come in hard, sometimes way inside, and I hit Brooke in the ribs. And he did not like it, and he had a few things to say, and I had a few things to say back. And before I could even finish the first word in the first sentence, he was in a dead sprint out to the mound. And within 20 seconds, we were both at the bottom of about a 40-person meat scrum. I mean, it was crazy. So, yeah, I mean, there's some times you have to do that. I mean, you know, you're trying to make a living. You know, if you can't make a hitter move his feet, and I don't advocate hitting people, but you have to be able to pitch inside. You know, that way the curveball is going to be more effective.
Right.
Or the slider. I mean, you got guys, you know, I know you guys did a segment with Mike Greenwell back in the day. When I played with Greeny in AAA, there's a kid who never moved his feet. If a pitch, he could see the ball so well that he would just move his body and get out of the way of an inside pitch and never even move his feet. And then, you know, just go right at you again. He had no fear up there. So sometimes you run across those guys and there's nothing you can do, like I said, except to get themselves out.
Louis, when everybody's running, getting into a fight, were you the first guy or the last guy?
Me?
Yeah, you.
I'm the last guy.
Yeah, you weren't
no,
there.
I actually, you know, I got thrown on my head a couple times and, you know, I went out and, you know, obviously the catcher always knows when they're going to throw at you, so they're always holding you. But I went in one of the fights one time when we was with the Red Sox. I was just a coach already. I tell you what, the next day I was like, man, I got hit on my back. I didn't even feel the hits, but it's like the next day I had bruises on my back and I didn't know where they came from. But I know it was obviously it was some guys. And then I started watching the replay. I'm like, he hit me on the back. You know, we're trying to pull people out. So I never liked this. You know, you always get sucker punch or you know, you get stepped on. You know, it's never, you always, you know, you try to, it should be like hockey. Okay, you guys want to fight here? Let's go. Go get them.
Right.
I guarantee you that'll solve a lot of problems.
Yeah, I agree with that.
But they'd have a clock timer.
Only go out there.
But they'd have a clock timer.
Yeah,
well,
they only go out there because they know
seconds.
They got a whole team to protect them.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's like, when Pedro pitches, you know, he used to like to throw at people. But you know what? He knew he had people, you know, backing him up. If you want to throw at somebody's head and mess with your career, okay, let's go at it. You know, that seems to be more fair, but they don't do that anymore. Unless you're a bump guard or one of those guys and say, okay, yeah, I'm going to throw at you, and then I'm going to throw my gloves down and I'm going to go after you. You know, that's the way it should be.
I never threw it ahead. That's, you know, like you said, Lou, you're messing with somebody's livelihood in their life. You don't want to do that.
Robin, so let's talk about Judge.
Yeah, Robin, what was it like when they told you after 10 years that it's not happening?
Well, I mean, if they have to face it in reality all the time. My situation was I got signed by Seattle and gone to spring training, and then I didn't make the club. I get released, and then the next morning they re-signed me because I guess somebody in the big leagues got hurt. So they signed me back to a AAA contract. And I was there 5 days, and I guess that guy wasn't hurt as much as they thought. So then they released me again. So that's when I was done. There was an article in Baseball America called "They All Lie." If you sound bitter about big league snub, and I pretty much, you know, burned a few bridges then, but it was on my way out. And ironically, Oakland offered me a job coaching after that. But it's tough. But you realize it happens to everybody. When I was a coach, you know, I used to have to tell kids, you know, hey, a few times, go tell this guy, you know, he can't play anymore. And that's a tough thing to have to do. And I just remember how I felt, so I always tried to be, you know, sympathetic about it.
The game's changed, though, where you got these guys making all these millions of dollars and they're relying, or you got a coach who's probably making, you know, a tenth of what they're making, if that.
No, less than that.
And how do you, how do you get them motivated, Louie?
You know, it's again, it's hard because the guys are making so much money compared to what the coaches are making. And there's not that seniority on the team anymore. It's based on salary. So you could be a young player, two-year-old player. It's like when we came up, the older guys will take care of the younger guys. It doesn't. There was always, you go out as a team together and you go after games and you hang out and you get to know each other. That doesn't happen anymore, you know, as much. And it's sad because you can't do the things you could do to a young player or talk to him and get him, you know, get him. I remember going up, you'd be like, okay, take my back to my room. Can't do that anymore. The rookie makes $700,000 a year.
No.
You know? Yeah. And you got guys making $100 million, $300 million, you know, it's just hard. It's just different.
You know, the veteran and guys, they had
coach,
their own seats.
The coach makes $150 million.
Right.
Yeah. The vets would sit there, you know, on the bus ride to the park and to the airport. You know, the vets had their own seat on the bus, their own seat on the airplane. Nowadays, there's no respect for tradition.
No, there's not. There's not. I remember they had two buses, one for media and rookies, and the other one's for the veteran players. So, you know, you were not allowed to be on that bus, on the second bus, unless you were told to. You know, things like that.
Yeah. Robin, so baseball's over. And you're going to turn around and you decide to go to college. I assume you went after you were done with baseball?
Well, I was doing, when I was coaching with Oakland in 88, 89, and 90, I was knocking off my undergraduate in the off season. And so when I graduated in 1990, I took the LSAT, the law school entrance exam. And then I applied to one law school, Stetson College of Law, because it was kind of close to where I lived here in Tampa. It was 49 miles one way. So I could commute. And I was either going to get accepted to law school and start a new job, or I was going to stay in baseball, which kind of sucked because I was, you know, 2,000 miles away from my home. I saw my wife and kids like once every 6 months when I was over there coaching because then my kids were too young to travel at the time. You know, they were starting school. And so anyway, the funny thing is I only applied to Stetson. I hadn't heard anything. And Oakland was in the series in 1990 with the Reds. And I knew that, you know, I was going to have to negotiate a contract for the next year. And so I go to Stetson. I meet with the advisory or the entry people. And I start telling them, hey, look, this is what I want to do. I want to go to school here, but I got this contract thing coming up. Oh, you play baseball. And the young lady who was showing me around was a big baseball fan, so I knew that helped. And lo and behold, she was telling me that her favorite player was Mike Bielecki. I said, well, that's interesting because me and Bielecki went to college together. So once I started telling stories about me and Bielecki in college, she was all ears. And 3 days later, I got my acceptance letter.
Nice.
So when I got elected judge 5 years ago, I sent Bielecki a message and told him that my entire legal career probably was based on the fact that he was this girl's favorite player. That's how basically how I got into law school.
Did he ask for a get-out-of-jail-free card?
Well, he didn't. I mean, thank God. But he doesn't live in the state anymore, I don't think. But he thought it was hilarious, and I did too. And, you know, so I did 2.5 years of law school. I became a prosecutor right away, and I loved being a prosecutor, but I really liked what those judges were doing, just being in control of the whole thing. I guess being a pitcher, I used to always kind of like to be the center of attention.
Okay.
It seemed like the judges kind of commanded that. So I planned that someday I would run for judge. There's two ways. You can be appointed, or you can run. I wanted to run for judge. I figured it would be easier that way. And while it's a grind to do it, I've been in this town my whole life. I knew a lot of people. I went every class I ever went to other than law school was right here in Tampa. So I went out in 2018, I got elected by the people of Hillsborough County to be a circuit court judge. Now I preside over serious felony criminal offenses.
Congratulations. That's amazing. What a story.
What are your toughest cases you've had? You don't need to mention names or anything, just toughest cases.
The tough cases, there's, you know, victims that are of many things. And child pornography cases are rampant, believe it or not. You know, you'll see cases on every docket in my courtroom of people with hundreds of, you know, in possession, accused of being in possession of hundreds of photographs of children, pornographic images. Those are tough. Homicides are brutal. You know, you're the families usually attend. You know, when you got someone who was murdered, or sometimes they, you know, it's. I could tell you stories. It's like TV, dismemberment, multiple stabbings. Everybody's carrying a gun. I mean, it's just, it's tough. And basically, I have to make sure that everybody has their rights protected. The accused has rights, and I have to ensure they're protected. The state of Florida has rights that they have to be protected. The victims in these cases, they all have rights. I have to make sure those are protected, too. And that's my job. Not just to call the balls and strikes, but to make sure everybody's on the same level. You know, everybody has the same opportunity and the same access to the courts, no matter what the situation.
How hard is it when you actually bring somebody in before your court and you just know you hate them? You don't like them. You know that.
Well, in some of those cases, too, that's just, I mean, I can't imagine, right? The child pornography and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
And the
How do you separate any personal feelings from being, you know,
a responsible judge? You know, as a prosecutor, you start out by knowing that you have to pursue the truth. So there's lots of times you'll know somebody's guilty. You just, the police just haven't figured a way to catch them yet. Mm-hmm. Or when they do catch them, they didn't do it the right way. And you have to follow the law. If you don't, then you have no business being in the system. And as a judge, that's even more important, to be able to sit there and know that somebody's guilty. They've made a confession, let's say. But this confession was illegally obtained. Mm. Something went wrong. Then you have to follow that law. Hmm. And if you don't, I mean, I tell the juries at the end of every jury trial that for over 200 years we've all agreed to live by the law and to follow rules that we've all accepted. And your failure as a juror not to follow the law will be a miscarriage of justice. Well, that's true. That applies to the courts and to the lawyers, too. Hmm. So you got to do the hard thing. I mean, if it was easy, anybody could do it, I guess. So you got to make those decisions. And sometimes, you know, someone who's been accused of a crime walks because the system didn't do what they should do. And if the system doesn't do what it's supposed to do, then that fails everybody. And every time there's a breakdown, hopefully that gets fixed so that the next time it's done the right way. People's rights are protected. No one is coerced into a confession, or no evidence against someone is gathered illegally. And it doesn't happen that often, but when it does, you got to make sure that everybody's protected.
Robin, have you ever had a situation where you're looking at either a defense attorney or a prosecutor and you know that either they're just not doing it right, they're not doing it effective? I mean, it's got to be hard for you to sit back and play the cards that are dealt in front of you and not say, hey, what are you doing?
Well, I mean, there are times like that, but you have to stay in your lane.
Right.
You know, you don't have blinders on per se because you see everything, but you have to make sure that you don't interject anything that shows that you favor one side more than the other. And, you know, I was an attorney for almost, you know, 30 years before I became a judge. And so I hope that I picked up enough wisdom and experience along the way to do that. And so far, I haven't had any real complaints, so I think I'm doing okay. But it's hard, like you said. I mean, when an attorney does something wrong, a defense attorney, the defendant has options. He can file motions for what's called an ineffective assistance of counsel. And if the attorney did something that was so outrageously incorrect, he might get another bite at the apple. They could set aside the case and start over again. So there's all kinds of things that, you know, like guys get convicted, you know, and there's 1,000 different appeals. Well, they always start off with going after the attorney. The attorney didn't do their job. And then they say that the police didn't do their job. Then they say the judge didn't do their job. So they go down the list of things while they're sitting in prison trying to figure out a way out of it. And if somebody didn't do something right, then they deserve to come back and do it the right way. That doesn't mean they're going to get off, but at least they're going to get another bite at the apple.
Right.
I'll give you an example. We just had a case that just concluded after 15 days here in Tampa. They called it the ice cream truck murder. A guy was accused of going after some people that robbed him and shot him and killing them. And it's alleged that he killed three of the wrong people and wounded three other people.
12 years ago or so, he got arrested. That case went to trial. And at the end of the first trial, the jury came back hung. 10 people on the jury said he was not guilty. 2 people said he was guilty. So they went through the whole process again. And no more than an hour ago, the jury came back with a 12-0 unanimous verdict of guilty on every single count the state brought. I mean, it's a world of difference of what the jury thought, you know, 10 years ago. But they convicted this guy. But he had another shot at it. Hmm. So you never know. Just because you get another bite at the apple doesn't mean you're walking out the front door.
Right. Louis, we need to wrap this up pretty quick. So I've got one question. I'll give you the last one, Louis, after this. Robin, what did baseball teach you that made you a better lawyer and judge?
Well, it taught me patience. It taught me humility, for sure. It taught me not to be afraid of losing. I mean, I never took the field and pitched a game where I thought I was going to lose. But you know, as a realist, that you're going to lose, right? But losing's not bad. And you can learn more from a loss, and that's whether it's on the field or in court, than you can from a win sometimes. So, and I guess it just taught me how to deal with different people. Because, you know, I got to play ball with people from Latin America, you know, African-American people, Asian folks, you know, kids from this big city, kids from small towns. And you learn that everybody's really got the same story, and everybody deserves to be treated the same.
Beautiful.
That was a big
couldn't answer. Say it. You couldn't say it any better than that. I mean, I always feel that baseball has taught me so much, not only to deal with different kinds of people, but different environments and different scenarios. And you have patience, you know, a lot of the, you know, the dedication, the determination, and the discipline you got to have to be able to do things and be successful at it. That all comes from the sport that I played since I was 5 years old, you know. And I think that's why a lot of companies and a lot of people, they want to hire athletes, former athletes, because obviously they kind of follow that pattern, you know. An athlete, to be able to get to that level, has to do so many things right, you know, and follow direction and instruction. So
couldn't agree with you more.
Well, Judge Robin, we can't thank you enough for being here and sharing your story. What an amazing route that you've taken and where you've come, and we're real proud and happy for all that you've done in serving the community. You're a good man.
Well, thanks. I appreciate the opportunity. Maybe I'll see you next year at the baseball event.
Only absolutely. If they have a wheelbarrow. I'm going to be there with Louie, right?
Well, you know, you had a local guy. I could have taken care of that wheelbarrow for you. My wife would have probably used it and made me haul dirt every day.
Oh, man, I wish I knew that. We were actually, like, looking at each other. What the hell are we going to do with this wheelbarrow?
I would have thrown it in the back of the Jeep and given it to my wife, and she would have put me to work with it.
It's a good one, too.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to do it next year. We're in.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for this opportunity.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
When it comes to health coverage, you want solid value from a trustworthy company you can rely on. Florida Blue offers Medicare Advantage plans that can help you get more out of your health coverage. And don't you want more? Call Apple Insurance, your local agency for Florida Blue, at 888-MY-BLUE-8 to have all your Medicare questions answered and learn about different options. Don't settle for less than the value and stability Florida Blue has delivered throughout the state of Florida to Medicare beneficiaries for more than 25 years. Value, security, knowledge, and trust. Blue Medicare from Florida Blue means more. Call Apple Insurance at 888-MY-BLUE-8 today to speak to a licensed agent about your Medicare Advantage options. That's 888-MY-BLUE-8. Apple Insurance and Florida Blue. Call 888-MY-BLUE-8 today.
Florida Blue is an independent license of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Association.
Good day. This is Alan, Secret to My Success, here with Mr. Louis Saliceo.
Hello, hello. How are you?
How you doing?
Good.
Good.
What's cooking?
We have Dawn. Dawn, yay! How you doing, Dawn?
Hello, hello. Good.
Hey, Dawn. Hey, Louis.
Hey, Henry.
We have Henry Lawrence. We didn't even intro, and the guy's jumping in. I love that.
Yeah, I love that. That's good.
Right?
Don't say that too loud.
Don't say it too loud. So Louis and I had the opportunity to meet Henry at the induction of Louis into the Florida Sports Hall of Fame.
That's so awesome.
Yeah, super nice guy. I just thought Henry'd be a little bigger. Henry, how tall are you?
6'4".
Ah, that's not that big anymore, is it?
Not anymore.
when you look at those eyes, you know it's coming to get you.
Yeah. So Henry, talk to us. I'm looking at your card, and I called you out on it. It says veteran of 3 Super Bowls. And I keep thinking to myself, so he played on a team that lost 3 times, but he's telling people he was on 3 Super Bowls, right?
Yeah.
Right?
I never even thought of that in that manner.
I mean, I had to look him up because I'm not a big football fan. I'm thinking, well, 3 Super Bowls, maybe he played for the Bills. You know? I mean, how many times did they go to the Super Bowl and they just couldn't, you know, pull the trigger?
Four,
exactly. Four. Right. But your team actually pulled the trigger. You won 3 Super Bowls. You're a 3-time Super Bowl champ.
We did. We came close a few other times, but that's all that happens.
So let's talk about, where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Florida and also on the Eastern Shore at River Farm Market. So we traveled Carolina, Virginia, New York.
Okay. But
grew up in Florida.
So I have to ask, you were inducted in the Hall of Fame, too, in Florida, correct?
Florida, yeah. Florida Sports Hall of Fame.
That's why you were there. Did you know Louis was being inducted? Because Louis taps me on the shoulder and says, Alan, did you know? I had no idea. So, Henry, did they do the same thing to you? Did they do the same thing to you, invite you to an event and then induct you right then and there? Or did they actually let you know you were being inducted?
Well, yeah, they let me know. Did a couple of things. Also, funny, the Sports Hall of Fame, I had brought my band in. They had a thing at the fairground, and I brought my band in. We got a chance to perform for the hall. It was big fun. No, I did not know at that time that I would get an opportunity to be inducted into the Florida Sports Hall of Fame.
That's pretty amazing. So, Louis, do you remember his football career?
Not really.
I mean, I seen the picture,
and he looked pretty damn mean to me.
Okay. So let's ask, where'd you go to college?
Florida A&M University.
Okay.
Stay on your side, Louis.
Yeah. No, Florida A&M. My son went to the engineering school over there.
Your son didn't go to FSU, Louis?
He went to FSU, but the engineering school is at FAMU.
Henry, you finished your 4 years there before you went into NFL, or did you leave early?
No, I left early, but I stayed 4 years, and I had another year of eligibility.
Okay.
But I didn't stay.
Okay. First team drafted you, signed you. Where'd you go?
Raiders. The number one pick, 19th in overall draft.
Wow. That would have been worth a lot of money today.
Yeah, tell me about it. don't get me to talking about that.
Did you ever yell at your mother and say, Mom, you could have conceived me like 20 years later and we could have been super wealthy?
Yeah. You think like an offensive lineman, that certain guy, play 2 games now, make more. Then I made it the whole 13 years I was in the league.
That's crazy.
I wanted to ask you, I know I played with some guys that played football and also played baseball, like Brian Jordan and Deion Sanders. And I remember Brian Jordan was, you know, he would have like a blister in his fingers, and he said, I can't throw. I can't play. I mean, I know football players is a contact sport. I have to say, there was always an injury, there was always an ache, there was always a pain somewhere. How do you cope with that in football? I mean, I've always been curious about it.
I think that's a mentality. And it's a culture also. I mean, that culture and that mentality has changed drastically over the years. And, of course, everything has changed drastically over the years. Even the way they played your game, baseball, something has changed, and it's going to continue to change.
It seems like chemicals were a big part of all those sports way back when. How did you fight the urge? Or we had Mike Green won our show from baseball, and he was basically saying they were nudging him to start doing little steroids, and he just didn't want to do it. And I've heard Louis' story, which was amazing, that, you know, he had a couple guys saying, you know, just a couple more home runs, Louis, you'll be worth millions more, and he just didn't do it.
Oh, my goodness. I did have that conversation, young fella. He came. He was 240, 6'8". And he left. He came back. He was 320.
Wow.
And he said, man, as good as you are, you're on a track, you know. It's beat, you know. You would really be. And I believed him, but I didn't need that. I was doing okay as it was. And I watched the things around me. And like my mom used to say, if it shows you it's a snake, it's a snake. And that's the same with an individual or with a drug, anything else. I'm watching people around, you know, the way they're acting. It's basically just for a lot. I said, okay, well, they say, well, no, I'm going to try this. It ain't going to, well, I don't need to try. I see it. I believe it. If they show you, believe it.
I was telling that story about a buddy of mine who, he was in a summer camp with Lyle Alzado, and Alzado was 110% all the time, and he said, you just didn't want to get hit. That man would conquer you. And he was a big dude, and here's a guy who lost his life pretty young for probably doing a little too many steroids, but it was just part of the game. It was just, that's just what was going on, right?
It was, and it probably would have been different if I had taken advantage of that, but I did okay. But I got to play against him, and man, I'll tell you, he was not. It wasn't no camping, it wasn't no party. It was, the guy was a beast.
That's what I heard.
Harry, you were a defensive player, right?
No, I did one play on defense. That was in practice one day, and I went crazy. And of course, I wasn't starting yet. And our O-line coach never let me went back over on defense because the D-line coach said, well, you're not playing. I'm going to play him. And I'm so glad that he protected me in that manner because the guys last less over there, especially back then, because the rules were totally different.
Henry, what's your favorite football movie?
Oh, shoot. I'm going to tell you a movie that I think about. Remember the Titans?
Yes.
I have a personal affinity to that movie. Actually, I got to meet the coach that went to the school, and they, you know, tried to conspire against him. And his assistant coach, who was with the guy, had a change of heart when he saw what was happening with the kids, and the kids were more important to him than being with this radical group. That, you know, and we're seeing a lot of that nowadays. But that's my favorite movie, and I think of that also because I thought my coach, you know, I said, damn, he could have been that guy because he had that kind of opportunity and legacy to run with. But it's, yeah, Remember the Titans is probably my favorite football movie. It's a real story.
Denzel Washington did an amazing job in that movie.
He did. They both did.
Wow.
Henry, all the years playing, which team that you played against, you always felt you had the hardest time?
Well, there was a few because of the way that we played. Our offensive tackles had quite often had a rough time because we held the ball. We held the ball for 5-6 seconds, and it basically was unheard of even during our time, but we did it. But I had a few games where that wasn't happening, and it was like a nightmare. But you know, the other part of it is they never made the proper adjustments when those things were happening. But I had Art Steele, Claude Humphrey, Jacob Green. I had a few nightmares.
Wow.
Yeah. You see those guys coming through, and you're like, oh my God, big guys pushing at you. I'm amazed of the feel of Sue. Donovan Sue is still playing and at the level that he's playing. You know, that guy's got his body really well. Donovan Sue, He's been with a lot of teams. He's always in a championship team every year. Sue, Donovan Sue, he just played last year with the champions, with the Kansas City. And the year before, he was with New England. He's been with the Dolphins. I mean, but he's always, I mean, he's been like 17, 18 years in the league and still plays every down. It's amazing to me how he does it.
Well, their body don't, they don't have to endure 2 days, hitting 2 days a day, two times a day in training camp and hitting twice a weekend during the season, throughout the season. Now it's a whole different ballgame. You know, you go to practice now, you see guys in their shoulder pad, but no knee pad. And it's a safety thing also, and I have nothing against that. But, you know, people have work ethic, though.
Yeah.
Henry, how do you think concussion protocol would have changed your game when you were playing?
Well, I probably wouldn't have been so goofy now.
Okay.
But then it's just a precautionary thing now. They're seeing it. And it's not something that's new. I mean, it's something that from the day the game started, you had concussion. And pretty much in all sports, at some point, you have collisions. And that occurs. It's just the way they have it now. You know, I was knocked out one time, you know, and they gave me a splinter song that came back and hold up the finger. You hold up two fingers and say, oh, yeah, I said three. He says, oh, yeah, all right. Put them back in. Now they take a precaution, which is good for the player's health.
So is it fair to say this happened approximately how many times in your career and you continue to be on the field?
I can't count the time, you know. The time that even when you come get after a play, you get back and how to that actual quarterback kind of hold up a second, you know, just kind of get your focus back. Well, you know, we never knew that that's what that was. You know, even though it was a minor a condition at the time, but the little minors end up coming to be a major. But they do it now. They protect the players. That it's a commodity they got on that field. Very, very expensive commodity.
Right.
And you gotta protect them, even though, you know, they get lose one, they bring another one in. I don't think the players' body mean as much, especially from my standpoint. Well, I'm not in the game now, so I won't make an opinion about that.
I actually think that helmets at some point were used as the weapon. They told you to go in with your head, hit them hard, come up through the chest, do something. You got to wonder if they made helmets a little more foamy and rubbery that they could protect and still not destroy somebody. It seems like that they need a redesign. That or put a point on the end of it so that you're saying, yeah, I don't want to kill anybody. Maybe we need to change it.
Well, I think they changed the format. You can't go in and leave with your hand now, I don't think. But the thing that scares me, especially defensive-wise, you got to come in and you get ready to make a tackle. Or basically, now they teach it. So they're in their mind, consciously, they're going to move their head one side or the other. Well, in my time, you know, like you face them up, you come in and you do it. But you train a guy, you got to move your head so you can't come in. I'm afraid that at some point, and I hope that never happened, a guy consciously said, oh, I got to move my head and move it to the side and make that impact, he could break his neck. And I don't, you know, I know this is not discussing, but that the impact in the neck is one of the delicate parts of the body.
So did you leave football or did football leave you? What happened to life after football?
Football left me.
Yeah, what happened?
I got my eyeball split open.
Ooh.
The second day of training camp, actually the best shape I'd ever been in my whole career. I went to camp at 300, you know, where before I didn't go to camp even as low as 249.
How did that happen?
What, 300?
No, the split eye. I think we know how you got to 300.
Oh, the 49. Oh, you know, I come down here and it's Father Son. I ran like crazy. I lose 25, 30, 35 pounds in all season. Just running. But my last year, I actually worked out with a bodybuilder. So I actually was, boy, if I'd done that, I mean, I think I had a good career. But, oof. I went to camp kind of knocking everybody around. And my coach told me I would be inserted back into the starting lineup, but my ball got split. So just second day of camp, on a pass protection drill, I'm blocking a guy, you know, and he comes in, God willing, he was trying to get he, his finger got in my helmet and ripped my eyeball open. Wow.
That had a hurt like, wow. I mean, that unbelievable.
Tell me about it.
And that was it. That was the last, was that the last play you played?
That's the last official play that I played. Yes, that's the last play I played.
Okay.
And I finally, when we went back in, after the strike, I didn't fly to it. Of course, I saw the writing on the wall. But they did call me back later on in the season. A couple guys got hurt, and I wasn't in no shape. Even though sometimes you can, you wonder, the window open, if you don't jump out of it, you know the fire keep burning. So I didn't jump out. So that's history.
Hmm.
But all is well.
Tell us about your life after football. What have you been doing?
Well, before I got out of football, I started this computer product company. I got engrossed in it and started dealing with aerospace, selling mainframes and all kind of stuff, rack mounts. And I did that, and then I was doing some affordable housing down here in Florida. And eventually I moved back to Florida. But I didn't continue for a while. Shut the company down. But I've always done vocal entertainment also. That's primarily what I do. And I have a couple of deals that I work with. One is called the Beamer. I got involved with it. I got on it. And I noticed how it definitely has helped me dramatically in my circulation and healing. And the other, to get my weight down more, and I've lost 15 pounds with it, but that one is called awakennation.com. I put / Henry Lawrence and it pulled it all up. But I've been maintaining. I'm finally starting back to perform. I go out a couple of times a year to a halftime concert for the Raiders at the in Las Vegas for the game.
So are you the singer? You're the lead?
Yes.
Really? What songs you like to sing?
Huh?
What songs do you like to sing?
I like to sing all great songs. I do some OJs. I do Chris Stapleton, Tennessee Whiskey, Otis Redding, Gladys Knight, Teddy Pendergrass, Sam Miller, Blue Notes. The song is what moves me. So I'm old school R&B. I sing a little country. I sing a little blues. And I do a lot of gospel. I grew up doing gospel too.
Will you sing for us now?
Don wants you to serenade her.
Yeah.
What song you want?
How about Chris Stapleton?
Oh my! Okay. I used to spend my nights out in the barrooms, drinking what they only love I knew. But you rescued me from reaching the bottom and brought me back from being too far gone. You're smooth, the Tennessee whiskey. You're sweet, with strawberry wine. You're warm and the glass of brandy. And honey, I get stoned on your love all the time.
Come on.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That was impressive, sir. How come you didn't sing the other night at the Hall of Fame event?
I thought I know better. They got him to go down there
and sing. And asked me to. I asked the told DJ, DJ if he needed it, if he needed me to do something. But, things got going and everybody forgot. So.
Henry, next time you're going to be up on stage.
Henry, they should have had you do the national anthem. I mean, seriously.
I'm always ready.
Wow. Lou, you had no idea.
Half gig, we'll come. Half jobs. If you got something you want, you need a performance.
Awesome.
Let me know. I'm for hire also.
I think we need to get him down here for April 15th.
Yeah.
Right?
What's happening?
Oh, the Tina Turner.
They're doing a Tina Turner concert.
Concert at Abacoa.
Okay. Well, let me know. Keep me posted.
We should get him down here. That'd be awesome. Louie, what kind of questions you got? I've been hogging the airwaves. What do you got for him, Louie?
Oh, I'm good, man. I'm good.
I'm surprised Louie is sober. I thought Louie was going to go on like a 20-day You're about halfway through it, Chad.
Winning that wheelbarrow alcohol?
Yeah, that wheelbarrow. My goodness, that was awesome. That was awesome. It really was.
We split it, and Alan and I split it, and it was good. So we haven't opened any of them yet, so.
I haven't cracked anything. I've actually got them sitting in a one of my the new furniture pieces that my I took to my parents' house after they passed, and my stepfather would be proud that I filled that thing with alcohol.
Oh, okay. Well, look, if you need any help, let me know.
Yeah, you bring me in a bottle next week too.
That's some good stuff. That's some good stuff. So, Henry, tell us. I'm going to give you the opportunity to promote anything that you're doing right now. Tell me what it is. Give us the elevator pitch. Tell us how somebody would reach you. Talk to us.
Henry.Lawrence70@gmail. But yeah, I started on this product I mentioned. I've actually lost 15 pounds, but it is called awakennation.com/HenryLawrence, and you can pull it up. Especially if it may help, you know, lose some weight. It may help with some diabetes, but I'm loving it, and I'm seeing that. The fat relieve itself, remove itself. I do the electromagnetic pad, which is that beamer. I've been doing the beamer for some time.
So you're saying B-E-M-E-R, beamer.
Yes, B-E-M-E-R. And you know, they want to know about that, the Henry Raiders 3 dot beamer, B-E-M-E-R group.com. And you can pull it up, but it's electromagnetic. It helps the blood circulate. And I don't know if you all know, when you get older, the small capillaries stop pumping blood completely. And only the veins and the arteries pumping the blood. So the small capillaries are what helps the body heal. And not the product, it gets the blood moving through it, takes all that old blood out, brings oxygen and nutrients, and it's a new deal. And I'm telling you, it works. It increases circulation. It's great for feel good.
Henry, how old are you?
I mean, I'm 71.
Mm. No way. Louis, would you have ever guessed that?
Nope.
He looks better than us, and you and I are the same age. That sucks, Louis.
In good shape.
Well, yeah, I'm looking pretty good, too, now.
Yeah, I mean, you can talk for Louis, but I'm seriously, I'm looking at your picture. I looked at all your stuff, and I couldn't believe that you had played in the 70s. I'm like, there's no way. You're really 71.
I did.
Wow. How long you been taking doing the Beamer stuff?
Beamer, about 5 years now.
Really?
Yeah, and my sponsor, that kid who had some issues. And from the time I met him to now, I mean, if you met him, you would never know he had issues. He even did a year in college, and he's doing trade. So I believe that circulation, body getting circulation, nutrients, whatever it needs, it can heal itself. But the problem in this country, you go to the doctor, they can't offer you alternative stuff because the person can sue them. But in Europe, it's a whole different thing if they don't. Off an alternative, they can get sued. So that's why Europe is so much healthier than we got issues, but dieting is a serious thing, and I take my diet serious.
Well, it's funny, you hear every commercial in the world about erectile dysfunction, ED, and it's always about circulation. So you tell me you figured this out, that this is actually helping with that as well?
Circulation. Huh. What makes it rise? Circulation. There ain't no blood flowing. Ain't no muscle going to expand.
Hey, Louie, did you hear that?
Yes.
I did. Did I do that?
I'm not violating any HIPAA things. I'm just saying, you know, you got to wonder, okay? So I'm actually going to say this website again so that people can hear it, because sometimes it's hard to hear you on this connection, but it's Henry, RAIDERS, the number one, dot Beamer Group, BEMERGROUP.com. Henry Raiders 1 www.beamergroup.com. Would you like to give people your cell number, or would you rather not?
Well, we can get to that later, but let's go with this.
Okay.
And also with the Awaken Nation, my weight loss, awakennation.com/Henry Lawrence.
So that's Awakened, AWAKEND nation.com/
right.
Henry Lawrence.
Yeah.
This card's got all kinds of information.
Yeah.
That plus Vocal Entertainment.
Boca Entertainment?
Vocal.
Mm-hmm. Vocal Entertainment.
Vocal Entertainment.
Nice.
Henry, we can't thank you enough for being here with us.
Well, you're, thanks for having me on.
You're a renaissance man. You're doing it all.
Okay, go on YouTube and put me up and put it down home blues in there. You'll catch me doing a deal over at Full Sail.
Nice.
Awesome.
Look it up
okay,
right now.
Thanks for having me on.
Thanks,
thank you,
Henry.
Sir. We appreciate it.
Okay, hope to see you guys soon.
Definitely.
When it comes to health coverage, you want solid value from a trustworthy company you can rely on. Florida Blue offers Medicare Advantage plans that can help you get more out of your health coverage. And don't you want more? Call Apple Insurance, your local agency for Florida Blue, at 888-MY-BLUE-8 to have all your Medicare questions answered and learn about different options. Don't settle for less than the value and stability Florida Blue has delivered throughout the state of Florida to Medicare beneficiaries for more than 25 years. Value, security, knowledge, and trust. Blue Medicare from Florida Blue means more. Call Apple Insurance at 888-MY-BLUE-8 today to speak to a licensed agent about your Medicare Advantage options. That's 888-MY-BLUE-8. Apple Insurance and Florida Blue. Call 888-MY-BLUE-8 today.
Florida Blue is an independent license of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Association.
Thanks for listening to The Secret to My Success on Legends 100.3.